Next is Baldwin and Shields versus Ramsley Motors. If counsel could step forward. May we please have appearances of counsel? Good morning, counsel. Welcome. Mr. Savitt, please go ahead.
May I have 5 minutes for rebuttal, please?
We'll have you back, perhaps for a little less.
Thank you. The question before this court is a question that has been answered repeatedly in favor of commercial landowners by the Appellate Division, with the notable exception of the court below here. In no fewer than three cases in the past 2 years, the Appellate Division has identified the precise issue in language almost verbatim to the question that's been certified by this court. In each of those published, unpublished decisions, Jimenez versus Powell, Ward versus Bayonne Industries, and DeSilva versus 110-112 Ferry Street, the panels recognized the issue that was specifically addressed in two published cases, Geringer versus Hartz Mountain and McBride versus Port Authority. In all of those cases, the Appellate Division held that where a tenant agrees in a lease to maintain and repair the demised premises, an out-of-possession landlord cannot be liable to a business invitee who is injured as a result of an alleged failure to maintain or repair the premises. The decision issued by the Appellate Division below here is an anomaly, since no panel before or since has expanded sidewalk liability law to encompass demised commercial premises. What is all the more striking here about the decision below is that two of the three judges on the panel comprised the two-judge panel that ruled in favor of the commercial landowner in the Jimenez case. To affirm the appellate court decision here would upend decades of precedent and expose out-of-possession landlords to liability for transient conditions that they are unaware of and would have little, if any, opportunity to address. The Appellate Division decision, as it stands now, has far-reaching consequences and adversely impacts the right of companies to enter into private agreements over demised leased premises. The appellate decision below has two fundamental flaws. The first is that it conflates sidewalk liability law with the law involving demised premises. The lease at issue here, much like the lease in the cases that I've referenced and are referenced in our brief, unambiguously requires the tenant to maintain and repair the demised premises. The area where Mr. Shields fell was undisputedly within the demised premises. And despite the many cases that distinguish sidewalk liability law, the panel below here improperly made no distinction between the sidewalk and the leased premises, holding the landowner here to the same standard it would have if Mr. Shields fell due to a transient condition on the sidewalk. Yet, that is a distinction with a material difference here. Whether Mr. Shields fell within the demised premises 5 feet from the sidewalk or 50 feet from the sidewalk makes no difference here. This was not an open driveway. It was a driveway that was separated by a fence and an entrance gate. And there's no assertion that any condition of the sidewalk led to his fall on the demised premises. The second fundamental flaw in the court's decision below is that it created or found a so-called ambiguity in the lease. The panel tried to distinguish the McBride case and another appellate division case, Malachi versus Matto, based on the facts. Yet the facts make this case no different than any of the other cases that run in favor of commercial property owners. The lease puts maintenance and repair of the premises within the exclusive control of the tenant, does not have a affirmative covenant by which the landowner has to maintain any portion of the premises. And moreover, the tenant here admitted that snow and ice removal was its responsibility. The fact that the lease does not specifically mention snow or ice removal is irrelevant. New Jersey courts have long held that snow and ice removal is subsumed within maintenance responsibilities. This court's case in Mirza, for example. Two appellate division cases, Caldas and Cabrera, one from last year, one from 2008, involved lease agreements that say maintenance and repair, yet involved, excuse me, a responsibility for the tenant to clear the property, the demised premises, of snow and ice. There's nothing in any of those cases to suggest that snow and ice removal have to be expressly stated or specifically allocated, carved out somehow from maintenance and repair. In fact, in the Malachi case, there was no written lease agreement. So the fact that the language of a lease is almost, I would argue, is irrelevant if the parties have an understanding and agreement that the tenant is going to be responsible for maintenance and repair, snow and ice removal.
Well, we don't have to really get to that, right? Because last summer we said in JH that control is the focal point of the duty question with respect to landlord liability. And in this case, the liability appears to be with Ramsey because the lease had turned over the responsibility for that property to Ramsey, and the action happened on the driveway that was within Ramsey's control.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Doesn't that end the discussion?
I'm sorry, what?
Doesn't that end the discussion?
I believe so. And this is not a situation where Mr. Shields had no recourse. He settled a claim against the tenant. So there's no public policy issue where a plaintiff needs to be made whole here. I agree with Your Honor. That should be the be-all
but
and end-all of the discussion.
Is there exclusive control, even under the contract? I'm looking at the provision on PA 104 and 05. I'll just read to you the portion that I'd like you to respond to. Tenant agrees that the landlord and his agents and shall have the right to enter into and upon the said premises or any part thereof at all reasonable hours for the purpose of examining the same or making such repairs or alterations therein as may be necessary for the safety and preservation thereof.
What section is that, Your Honor?
Article 21.
Pardon me?
Article 21.
But the lease...
Isn't there more to that? As also says, yeah. But that right that does not create an obligation on the part of the landlord to make such repairs? Isn't there more to that section? Even though the landlord had the right to enter, the lease says it does not create an obligation on the part of the landlord to make such repairs. It's 104, 105, Counsel.
I'm sorry, what section, Your Honor?
104. It's a question Justice Alvin asked you.
Yeah.
Article 21, it reads Section 2L.01. It must be 21.01.
So my question is, with looking at it in its totality, it provides the landlord the right of entry
The lease says that the owner is prohibited from entering the leased premises or the building without one day notice for purpose of inspection. That's Section 11.03.
Article 21.
Pardon me?
Look at Article 21, where it talks about the reasonable right to enter. But it has that second sentence that Justice Fernandez-Vina is trying to get you to focus on, which says the article shall not be deemed to be a covenant by the landlord, nor be construed to create an obligation on the part of the landlord to make such inspection or repairs. It's critical language because since 1958 in the Michaels case, this court has distinguished between right to enter, and a covenant to repair. The covenant to repair can give rise to a duty in tort, but not the former. Our court has said that, and it's been repeatedly followed by the appellate division. So whoever drafted this lease was well aware of our case law, distinguishing between a covenant and a simple right to enter, to examine, inspect, and make repairs if they chose.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. The specific right to maintain and repair is an affirmative covenant that the tenant had agreed to.
That's Section 304.
That's correct. As if they were the de facto owner of
the
premises.
They read in tandem, correct?
Yeah. My question to you was very simple. Did the landlord have a right to enter to make repairs if he deemed it necessary?
No, Your Honor.
That seems to be in direct conflict with Article 21. Do you have that with you?
But the exclusive control, Your Honor, is still within the ambit of the tenant here. That just because they have the property is owned by the owner, by the landlord. But that doesn't, again, in conjunction with the paragraph that I just read, that they have to give 24-hour notice.
We don't have to give,
so if the furnace breaks, for example, and the tenant says, part of our lease agreement is that you're going to provide us with heat. You better fix this furnace. The landlord, with appropriate notice, could come on the property to repair that furnace. You would agree with
right,
that?
Right,
but it's the tenant. I'm not fighting with you about
sure.
this. This is an example of where that right to entry might be involved.
Sure, the tenant is there 24/7. The tenant is there on a daily, regular, routine basis as a matter of operating its business. An out of possession landlord is
not present.
Is just that, an out of possession landlord.
Yeah.
They're not there.
Let me ask you, because the photographs are not very revealing.
Yes.
This was a driveway used for essentially for people to come and look at possible cars they might want to buy. There were cars parked on the driveway. Am I correct about that?
Yes. When the business is open and operating, yep. The gate is open so that business invitees can walk on.
You could walk on and do
and,
that.
And
so if the landlord suddenly decided, I got to plow this thing because there was just a snowstorm, the landlord would have encountered cars that had no ownership or interest in on that lot and would not be in a position even to plow that.
Correct.
So that supports your point with respect to the control issue, correct?
Correct. And
go ahead.
To Your Honor's point, sure. I know we're talking about the language of the lease, but if you look at the Malachi case, there was no lease. So the tenant in Malachi, who I believe was the state, has undertaken, there was an understanding and agreement between the out-of-possession landlord and the tenant that the tenant was responsible for maintenance and repair of the floor of the showroom, whatever you want to call it, where the business was taking place. That's exactly what we have here.
Well, okay, so let me give you a slightly different scenario. You have a landlord who periodically inspects the leased premises, because he wants to make certain the tenant isn't destroying it. In this situation, instead of snow, he sees a huge sinkhole and knows that people, cars, pedestrians may be going through that driveway and suffer serious injury, and the tenant isn't making the repair. Number one, I have two questions for you. The first one, under the lease, Article 21, doesn't the landlord have the right to make the repair? And number two, even in the absence of Article 21, no contract, wouldn't he have a duty to do so? Because the landlord has leased the premises, is making a profit from the premises, and also has an obligation, just as the tenant does, to make certain that innocent members of the public are not going to be exposed to unnecessary dangers. Go ahead.
Just if I may, Justice Albin, the second question first. If you have a landlord like as we have here, who is where the tenant is the de facto owner, take a triple net lease, for example, it's the tenant that has the obligation to maintain the demised premises, not.
So you're telling me if the landlord passes by and sees a dangerous condition of property on his premises that he can repair, and he knows that there's a substantial likelihood that someone's going to be injured, and he's profiting through the rent, he can just ride on? He has no obligation, no duty?
No, I'm not suggesting that, Your Honor.
But the appropriate thing in that situation would be to contact the commercial enterprise that's on the property.
Under Your Honor's scenario, the owner happens to be driving by, and I would agree with you that whether you want to call it a legal duty or not, the owner should call the tenant and say, hey, you have an issue, are you addressing this, have you been addressing it?
Right.
Or under 21, take the matter into its own hands.
Okay, okay.
But that's different. The drive-by is incidental. That's not part of the owner's responsibility.
But
to
it might
make
be. Maybe not in this case where there's snow. You know, it snows and the snow may be there one day and the landlord might not have noticed. But there are many cases where landlords inspect their properties, strip malls. They want to make certain that the tenants aren't destroying it. They may very well be aware of dangers to the property that may expose members of the public to harm. And would you agree, under that circumstance, regardless of whatever contractual relations the tenant may have to the landlord may have an independent duty to take action to repair his property if the tenant will not do so in order to protect the public?
If the landlord is aware of a condition that is a potential hazard.
That's right.
Then
on the lease premises.
That they would have a duty.
But right.
In the strip mall setting.
That presupposes that they've made an inspection or that they have any kind of duty to.
That's what, knew or reasonably know. Well, the question of duty is a question of law. They knew or reasonably know that there is a present danger on the property. Do they have a duty to contact the tenant to repair it or to do so themselves on property that they own and from which they're making a profit?
Well, the profit, let me address the profit issue, if I may. There's no contingency on, the amount of cars somebody coming onto their car lot if they purchase a car that...
I'm asking you, General. I'm not... Look, I was asking a hypothetical question, anchored to your facts, necessarily.
Although this is not a triple net lease, the fact that there's language in here that says the tenant is acting as if they are the de facto owner... The let's say the landlord is in California or somewhere out of state, they don't have an obligation to make an inspection of the premises.
I understand I gave you a different example. If they knew or reasonably had...
If they do, if they drive by, I'm hesitant to use the famous attorney words, it depends, but what if they... What if there's a transient condition or a divot somewhere where they can't observe it?
That's different. The reason why I'm asking these questions, I'm about to stop, is duty is a duty under our tort law isn't necessarily restricted by the contractual terms between a landlord and tenant. A duty may impose upon the owner of property an obligation that is greater than the parties have agreed to among themselves. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. By the same token, Your Honor, if the court looks at all of the appellate division cases addressing the duties and obligations, if any, of an out-of-possession landlord vis-a-vis the tenant in a demised premises, with the exception of the court in this case, they've all held that the exclusive right and obligation to maintain those premises are within the tenant's responsibility, then it's the tenant that owes the duty, not the landlord.
You have two critical facts here. You're dealing with a commercial premises, and you're dealing with a commercial premises that is exclusively in the possession of this tenant. This is not a strip mall. This is not a shopping mall.
It's not a residential
property. This is a commercial property handed over to the tenant to operate a business with no supervision from the landlord. Those are critical facts for you, are they not?
I agree, Your Honor. The other point I would make about Section 22 is there's nothing in the lease that affirmatively obligates the landlord to maintain the property. So even though the lease may say they have a right of entry, that's different from saying they have a right to remove snow and ice or keep apprised of transient conditions.
Isn't that a third critical factor, that this case involves snow and ice? You may have a duty in another area that arises, that presents a danger. But our analysis here, whether under the contract or under the Hopkins factors, has to focus on snow and ice, no?
Yes. Snow and ice being a transient condition is similar to most of the appellate division cases that I've referenced here today and in our brief. And that's also, I think, part of what Justice Albin, what you were asking about. Is it coincidental that it can't be based on coincidence whether a landlord is going to pass by and they happen to see a transient condition, and do they have a duty to it can't hinge on that. So because it's transient, in another case there was dust and dirt on the floor that could be cleaned up. Snow and ice, with melting and refreezing conditions. Those are all transient conditions that the tenant is in the best position as the party with exclusive possession of the premises and the exclusive obligation to maintain, that it's their duty, not the out-of-possession landlord, to address those transient conditions.
Interesting. Other questions? Anyone? No. Anything you'd like to add now?
No, thank you. Not at this time, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll have you back. Mr. Krause.
May it please the court. This case is a case that comes to this court from the appellate division. I'm here today to ask you to affirm what the appellate division did. In particular, the appellate division looked at the cases that came from this court. They looked at the Hobson case, the Monaco case, and they applied the instructions on how to find out if someone has a duty in this state to the facts of this case. What the petitioner is arguing for is essentially creating a class of commercial landowners that have special protections that aren't available to any other landowners in the state. The area where my client fell would otherwise be considered a common area if there was another tenant on the property. So commercial properties with multiple tenants, landowner would have a duty there.
Isn't that a significant difference? Where there are multiple, like a strip store mall. Isn't that very different from the situation here? You have a single tenant who's in possession of the entire premises.
No.
Isn't it very different?
I don't believe it's any different. The only way that you could try to distinguish a difference is if you're talking about the element of control.
Isn't that key to the argument here?
Not according to Monaco, it's not. Monaco is very clear that control is something that can be considered, but it's not the deciding factor and whether or not
when
there's
there are
a duty.
No other factors, isn't that the key factor?
But there are other factors.
And what are those factors, Counsel?
The factors that the fall happens right next to the public sidewalk. This landowner
still on the premises,
though,
right?
I'm sorry?
Still on the tenant's premises.
Correct. But here's what we have to look at. This landowner had a non-delegable duty to clear that sidewalk. The pictures in the appendix are clear that nobody cleared that sidewalk. They had a non-delegable duty. They had to be in that spot to clear those sidewalks. And if they were in that spot and participating in that duty, they would have seen right out of their peripheral vision, right next to the sidewalk, that the entire driveway was a sheet of ice. And as my client testified after he was on the ground and fell, when the EMTs finally reached him, they had to crawl to him on their hands and their knees to get to him because the whole thing was a sheet of ice. There was no safe ingress or egress to the property. And had this landowner partaken in its responsibility to clear those sidewalks, it's right there, and this is different than...
But if it's a little further up the driveway, would they still have a duty because they could see it through peripheral vision? Where does that duty end? Up at the front door?
In this case, the entire driveway was a sheet of ice.
So where does the duty end? This happened, as you said, close, but you say that you can see it peripherally. You can see peripherally up to, all the way up to the door, up the driveway. Where is the landlord's duty end?
Well, the duty ends where it wouldn't be reasonable to foresee or expect a danger. That's where the duty ends.
Wasn't the entire driveway, you just said, completely covered in ice?
Correct.
So wouldn't it be foreseeable all the way up through the driveway?
If it's reasonable to foresee that they're going to...
a duty because the landlord's there to clean the sidewalk, to also clean the driveway, perhaps clean the back lot, because it would all be foreseeable. Is that the duty you would impose on a landlord?
Potentially, but in this case, the duty may have been resolved simply by contacting the tenant.
But the duty was on the tenant, and you have settled with the tenant.
Under what analysis the duty was under? Under the contract of maintenance and repair,
And our case law.
Under our case law, our duty is decided by looking at several factors. And an agreement between the parties is just one factor that you're going to look at.
So let's look at the Hopkins factors, and the third factor in particular. I'm following up on Justice Patterson's questions earlier. You have used cars on this lot. What is the ability and opportunity of the owner to clean up this lot without damaging that which is on the driveway?
Well, the issue with this particular danger is not that the lot wasn't plowed. The lot was plowed. The danger here is that now ice had been allowed to form because there was no sanding or salting done. Sanding and salting a safe passageway from the property to the actual building, from the sidewalk to the building, it's not going to interfere with any of those cars.
So you said earlier, if I heard you correctly, that the obligation, the duty would extend to the entire driveway. Now it sounds as though you're limiting it to a single passageway to the front of the building?
That is my position is that the landlord should be responsible at the very least for safe ingress and egress from the property. The question I was asked in terms of where does the duty end, I think it's a question of reasonableness. Is it reasonable to extend it to the entire driveway? That's a question of reasonableness.
And your position on that is?
My position on it is that I believe it's reasonable to provide safe ingress and egress to the property. Potentially it could be expanded beyond that, but I think at the very least it's reasonable to hold landlords responsible for safe ingress and egress.
With respect to the sidewalk, there was a dual duty on the part of both the tenant and the landlord, correct?
The sidewalk was not mentioned in the lease.
I'm sorry, please speak a little slower.
I'm sorry. The sidewalk was not mentioned in the lease.
Was not mentioned in the lease.
But in terms of my understanding of our law, the tenant would not be able to escape responsibility for the sidewalk simply because the landlord had a non-delegable duty.
So there would be a dual duty.
Correct.
And you're arguing that there was a dual duty, at least with respect to that portion of the driveway?
Correct. And again, it's, you know, in reading all the case law and reading the way that the common law has evolved in this state, it's done so in a way to make things clearer, more concise, and less arbitrary. And here, you know, if you look at this whole passageway, the sidewalk, the driveway, they're made out of concrete slabs that are approximately the same color, the same size, and he had taken two more steps. The distance is probably about the same as from where I'm at to that council table.
Are you really arguing that sidewalk liability should extend to surrounding areas made out of similar material that is private, commercial property that's not sidewalk? Are you really here arguing that we should have sidewalk liability plus some other stuff around it that might look the same?
No, my argument here is that it's the distinction here becomes arbitrary.
Why? Sidewalks are public egress. Mm-hmm. They've always been dealt with separately under the law. You're now saying the boundaries of a sidewalk are arbitrary. We should just kind of keep extending the liabilities beyond the sidewalk?
It's not about an extension of sidewalk liability. Just that it's arbitrary that his same path, same looking,
Well, he could have fallen on the sidewalk, is what you're saying, and that there would be a different, potentially, set of liabilities as to at least one of the parties in this case. But he didn't fall on the sidewalk.
Correct.
So where are you going with that?
Just, again, it's just to state that the landlord has a non-delegable duty because it owns that property.
A non-delegable duty to do what? To maintain? Is that what you're arguing? Because it's not repair. You're talking maintenance, aren't you?
I'm talking about the snow and ice removal, but yes.
So how do you respond to the transient argument? Because the sidewalk is different from the driveway, because on the sidewalk you have general members of the public traversing the sidewalk. And the only people going into the driveway are going to be employees or business invitees, correct? So that's one very big distinction. Do you agree?
Correct, yes.
So with respect to, and with respect to the driveway and snow and ice, that is a transient condition. And can you expect a landlord who has demised the premises under a lease, under the pretty much exclusive control of the tenant, to be responsible for that when the lease says that the tenant is responsible for the maintenance of the property? Go ahead.
Well, any one instance of snow and ice can be transitory, but this is something that has to be taken into consideration for every single winter. There has to be a plan to address snow and ice remediation.
And they had one. They had a plan. They had maintenance obligation on the tenant.
There's no talk about snow and ice removal on the lease.
So let's say the lease had snow and ice. Would you be arguing before us?
I still believe that they have the duty to act reasonably. They had to be in the position. They're in the position where
they
had to.
So the contract language doesn't mean anything because you're saying the duty supersedes it. Is that what you're arguing?
Yes. I mean, it can be considered as part of the factors, but it's not the controlling factor.
You don't dispute that you're asking for an expansion of the law as it currently exists.
I don't believe that it would be an expansion. I mean, if you look at Hopkins and if you look at Monaco in particular is clear. A landlord has a duty to inspect the property. That was a case where there was talk about control.
What does that mean to? So let's say there is a duty, like every minute, every second, every time it rains, time it snows?
No, but we just need to look at the facts of this case to answer that question. The snowfall had occurred the night before. The tenant had testified that they cleared the lot at about 5:30 the night before. This accident happened just after 10 o'clock the next morning. There's plenty of time and opportunity for that landlord to have done the work to clear the sidewalk. The landlord didn't show up to clear the sidewalk. The lease doesn't talk about the sidewalk.
We don't know what arrangement landlord and tenant has with respect to clearing the sidewalk.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Do you know what arrangement the tenant and the landlord had concerning clearing the sidewalk in front of the premises?
There's nothing on the lease about it. Okay. So
there's no discovery on it because this wasn't a sidewalk case.
There's nothing in the record.
For all we know, the custom and practice may have been for the tenant to clear the sidewalk.
It may have been, but the landlord still had the duty to be there and was responsible for that.
That I understand.
Anything you'd like to add?
I'll just close by, this court has long disfavored exculpatory agreements. And my perspective is that to read terms like de facto owner, maintenance, repair, there's no talk about the exact snow and ice removal in the lease. What this court is essentially endorsing is an exculpatory agreement. And why do we disfavor exculpatory agreements? Well, this court has instructed us because they induce a lack of care.
But are you, on the one hand, you're saying that it's not addressed in the agreement, and the other, you're saying it's an exculpatory agreement. Which is it?
I'm saying that in interpreting this lease to mean snow and ice remediation when it's not in the lease at all, the court is essentially drafting an exculpatory agreement between these parties.
So assuming that snow and, look, it'll be easy in the future for people to put snow and ice in the contract. So just imagine that it's there, okay? Right. Are you saying that in every case where commercial premises are leased and there is a provision in the contract that requires the tenant to remove the snow and the ice, that the landlord is going to be responsible for every person who falls on the driveway if the tenant does not adhere to the provisions of the contract?
I'm saying it has to be looked at whether or not they could have reasonably acted. And in this case, it had been hours since the snowfall. They should have known, they should have been in the position to clear that sidewalk, which would have given them the opportunity to just look over their shoulder and see that the entire driveway is a sheet of ice. There's no safe ingress or egress.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Savitz, brief rebuttal.
Couple of brief points. What Mr. Krauss is arguing, it essentially flies in the face of the whole idea of an out-of-possession landlord. You're either out of possession and there's a contract to in this case, as we have here, that the tenant has assumed the obligation to maintain or repair, or you don't. I mean, or you have a landlord who is hands-on and affirmatively takes that obligation. That's not what we have here. Let me just address a couple brief points. Council mentioned the Monaco case and the Hopkins case. The Jimenez case, which I mentioned at the outset to the court, that has been distinguished multiple times by the appellate division in cases factually similar to what we have here. In Jimenez, it says, Monaco does not, however, address the precise issue presented here, which is whether a commercial landlord has a duty of care to invitees of its tenant when the lease agreement between the landlord and tenant places responsibility for ordinary maintenance and repair of the premises upon the tenant. That is almost verbatim from the question that this court has certified. Monaco was a sidewalk case where there was a sign that I believe flew out or was blown out, somehow left the sidewalk, and the landlord was obligated to still have a duty to have maintenance over the sidewalk or things on the sidewalk. That's not what we have here. With regard to Hopkins, several courts have distinguished Hopkins, depending on the panel. Most notably in Geringer, the court said, even if the Hopkins, let me back up one second. It's our position that Hopkins has no applicability to this, because in Hopkins, we had a real estate broker. That was the issue before this court, whether a real estate broker had a duty to someone who was visiting.
But Hopkins sets up duty factors, generally, that govern here. You would agree.
But in Hopkins, do we...
You say you win under them, but you would agree that the Hopkins duty factors set the framework.
It's my reading of Hopkins that it sets up these guidance for whether there's a duty when it hasn't been established before. For example, a real estate broker. But notably in Hopkins, the court did not apply the standard to the homeowner. Because the homeowner, it even said that the homeowner had a pre-existing duty to people who were coming on to visit the house.
And we've said the Hopkins factors are useful in those novel settings, but they don't replace categories that still apply, such as business invitee and, you know, all the typical labels that we use in shorthand way to describe the nature of a recognized relationship between somebody coming onto premises and the party that's responsible.
Correct, Your Honor. I was getting back to Geringer, the court said even if the Hopkins factors were to be applied, in light of the undisputed nature of the record germane to the maintenance and repair of the area where the plaintiff fell, such a result comports with the factors in Hopkins. And the court said there's no public interest to impose a duty, no relationship between the parties. That's significant here. There's no relationship between the landlord and Mr. Shields. There's no attendant risk, no opportunity or ability to exercise reasonable care. The only other point, I know we talked at length about Section 21. I would just point out again that the right of entry, which is what Section 21 talked about, is separate and apart from the right of control, which is the operative issue that this court needs to look at. Who had exclusive control of the premises? Who had the ability and the obligation to maintain and repair and do the snow removal? And that falls exclusively within the tenant's responsibility.
Thank you. Thank you, both counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess till 1 o'clock.